Welcome to episode 186 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Saturday, October 22nd, 2011. I am the Solid Monster, and we have Vengeance tomorrow night on pay-per-view for WWE. We're coming off the big Bound for Glory TNA pay-per-view last week. It's pay-per-view every weekend. Just assume that that's the case. Lots to get to here. We're going to talk a lot of TNA first and foremost, but before we get to that, got two quick things I want to talk about here. First, I will have an announcement at the end of this show pertaining to Sound Off 187, which is coming up a little faster than you may think. So you'll want to stay tuned until the end of the show for that. But the other thing I wanted to talk about here, and I became aware of this morning, based on some footage that is posted on YouTube. You can go on my Facebook page right now. Go to facebook.com/thesolomonster. If you're not friends with me on there, friend me on there. I put a link up to a phenomenal segment. It took place at the Florida Championship Wrestling Show last night in Kissimmee, Florida. This did not air on TV, I don't believe. And it's Dean Ambrose, the former John Moxley, who of course is just mopping things up down there in FCW right now. He had that great, great match a couple of weeks ago with Tyler Black, which I talked about on the Sound Off. He had a match recently with William Regal, who went down to FCW. I have not seen footage of that match, but I heard it was pretty good. And in this particular piece of footage, he is issuing a challenge to CM Punk, who was down there to sign autographs and take pictures for a meet and greet. And as Punk said when he got on the mic a little bit later on, it's his day off. And Ambrose threw down the challenge. Punk came out, and they had a back and forth on the mic. In fact, Punk was going after him. It was a wild scene. Obviously a very small crowd, but just electric. And one thing led to another. Norman Smiley came out. Of course, he is an authority figure down there in FCW and one of the trainers. He came out, made the match for later on that night. The main event would be CM Punk against Dean Ambrose. And there's footage of, I would say, maybe half the match, maybe a little less. It's not the entire match. It's basically three parts, the first of which I posted on Facebook. The second part has the match. The third part has some of the post-match. You know, you could pretty much figure out the outcome. But everything about this was just fantastic. And name me one other WWE main eventer that would be willing to do something like this. Maybe John Cena. I mean, I could see. I know Cena once before was at a New England house show, but that was the organization that his father works for as a manager and I think an announcer. Actually, that might have been a benefit show for one of his brothers who is a cop and had been injured. So even Cena. I mean, name me another WWE main event guy from now or from yesteryear that would just go down there on his day off. He's down there to sign pictures, take autographs, and he ends up having a phenomenal match with this guy and really tries to elevate him. Even in the post-match interview, he's talking about Ambrose and puts him over big time. And Ambrose is the kind of guy who you can make the argument he should already be on TV. I think it's more a situation of they probably don't have anything for him. Tyler Black, for God's sake, I mean, that guy's been stuck down there now for just months and months and months. But it's interesting now in that you've got Tyler Black down there, Dean Ambrose, Antonio Cesaro, of course, is the former Claudio Castagnoli of ROH fame. Chris Hero is not yet down in FCW. There's still some issues being worked out, but it's pretty much an inevitability that he is coming into WWE, so he'll be down there at some point. And unless one of these guys gets called up in the next couple of weeks, they're going to have this really, really, really awesome core of guys down there in FCW. And it's just a matter of time before they start calling some of them up. I just pray that when they do, they don't saddle them with some sort of horrific gimmick and they actually know what to do with them. This is, if you go watch this footage, I mean, this is pro wrestling 101. It's not about characters. It's not about gimmicks. It's not about who's in power. It's just two guys that don't like each other. One really young, you know, brash, cocky kid, and CM Punk, who used to be that young, brash, cocky kid, although, as he points out, he was doing that in OVW, not FCW. And they just had a great match, and I think if you watch the footage, it's something to get excited about. You know, as I said online when I posted the link, I said hopefully in a couple of years we can see the same match on my TV. The only shameful part is that I had to sit on YouTube and watch it, but go check that out. It's absolutely worth the time. Now, as far as TNA is concerned. Since we're going to start with them, they had their big Bound for Glory pay-per-view last weekend in Philadelphia. This is what they would like to think of as their WrestleMania. This is their big showcase each year. It's the big Bound for Glory show every October. And a lot of varied opinions on the show. I will say this. I did not see the entire show. I saw the two main events. I saw the only two matches that mattered in the eyes of some people. Hulk Hogan against Sting in a fight for control of the company. And, of course, Kurt Angle defending the TNA World Heavyweight Championship against Bobby Roode. And I just wanted to make mention of one thing here. One of our listeners, Nissim, actually posted kind of a funny comment that I thought was worth repeating here as it pertains to the outcome of the main event. He said, Bobby Roode must not have been old enough to win the world title. That's what Hulk Hogan meant when he said he wasn't ready. So I just thought it's a very good point he makes. You know, Bobby Roode was born in, I believe, in 1977, which would put him, he's in his mid-30s now. So he's got, you figure, another 12 or 13 years, I guess. And then the guy will be primed for success. So we have multiple reports over the past week. The original plan for the pay-per-view, let's start with the main event, was for Bobby Roode to defeat Kurt Angle for the TNA Championship to close the pay-per-view. Okay, even the day of the event, up until a certain point, Bobby Roode was supposed to win the championship. And the story going around was that Hulk Hogan lobbied to have the finish of the match changed. He felt that Roode was not ready to run with the championship, and so they acquiesced to his demands, and the finish was changed. Now, mind you, this is the finish that they had planned for a long, long time. I mean, when this Bound for Glory series started, I don't believe Bobby Roode was the choice to go over and win the championship at the end. Obviously, they were pushing Crimson very hard at the time, much to the chagrin of a lot of people, myself included. But at the end of the day, you know, they were trying to push a new guy, a fresh face, a younger guy. And I don't know how old Crimson is, but he's not as old as Hulk Hogan or Sting or somebody like that. And of course, what happened with that, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, they were pushing Crimson. He was building up all these points. He was running away with the tournament that went on and on and on for months. This Bound for Glory series started months ago. And at some point, they decided, you know what? Either he's not ready or he fell out of favor with management. Something happened. Crimson got knocked out of the tournament just like that. He wasn't really injured, but they did an injury angle. He was hurt. They took him out. And at that point, they decided, all right, we're going to go all the way with Bobby Roode. They've always had very high aspirations for him. When he was a tag team, beer money wasn't really doing much in the way of singles. There was always a lot of talk that, in TNA's eyes, he one day would be one of their big, young main event players. Maybe not this soon, but it was an inevitability at some point that that would happen. And they decided to go all the way with him. So it wasn't long, long term, but it was long enough where people the weekend of the show knew that Bobby Roode was winning the championship. And I talked on this show last week about that radio interview that Hulk Hogan did. And boy, did I talk about that. If you missed that, go back and listen to episode 185. He just buried Bobby Roode 6 feet under. When I first heard the interview, I thought, hey, he's in character. You know, he's a heel. He represents Immortal. Kurt Angle is wrestling Bobby Roode in the main event. What is he supposed to say? But as the interview went on, and he had nothing but praise for Jeff Hardy, he had nothing but praise for James Storm, one of the other big baby faces in the company, it became very clear that Hogan was not, kayfabing or in character. This is, you know, these are his real thoughts. And he went on the radio right before their biggest pay-per-view of the year. They've been doing a pretty damn good job pushing Bobby Roode now for weeks. The story about how he's been doing this for 13 years and the video packages and just everything. And he's the face of the company. In the eyes of many, he essentially runs TNA. And obviously he has enough clout to get the main event changed at their biggest show. So he is a power broker in TNA. And here he is on the radio bashing Bobby Roode. So this really should not have come as a surprise to anybody, the fact that not only Roode lost at the pay-per-view, but what happened at the next set of tapings. So there's obviously a lot of resentment towards Hogan. Longtime members of the roster, not very happy about what happened. Hulk Hogan also ripping on AJ Styles in that interview that I mentioned last week. And then Styles responded on Twitter. He was not very happy about the comments. Hulk Hogan is not a beloved person among some of the people, anyway, in the TNA locker room these days. And it's funny because when the pay-per-view went off the air, Hogan went on Twitter, which he cannot seem to help himself but do. He goes on Twitter after the show and says, "For all the ignorant haters that hate that I proved them wrong, I was bumping after 8 back surgeries. Suck it, haters." That's what he said on Twitter. And that, of course, is in reference to the Hulk Hogan Sting match, which I'll talk about right now. Hulk Hogan and Sting had what I would call nothing short of a miracle at Bound for Glory. Hogan went in there. Clearly, it was not designed to be a match. It was meant to be a fight. And 58 or 59-year-old Hulk Hogan, whatever he is these days, he walks around like he's 78, comes to the ring dressed for combat. You know, he's got the white shirt with the ripples in the back. He's wearing jeans. I think his fists were taped up. He was ready for a fight. And I, you know, it's one of those things where obviously if you judge it on the basis of being a wrestling match, it was god-awful. And it wasn't meant to be a wrestling match. They said that going in. If you look at it for what it was pretty damn good. I won't say it was great, but I won't say it was trash. Now, if you are simply not a fan of Hulk Hogan, if you are a fan of real wrestling and real competition and don't like the idea that you have two men whose combined ages exceed that of 100 is in one of the co-main events of Bound for Glory, then yes, I see your point of view, and you're absolutely right. This was not good. But I looked at it for what it was, and, you know, Hogan is one of those guys where no matter what he says when he's doing radio interviews or on Twitter or any of the stupid bullshit with his family members and all that, he is somebody who has been in wrestling for 35 years now, maybe a little bit more. He is going to go down as one of the most, the word I'm looking for, I was going to say treasured, I don't even know if that's the right word, but he will go down as one of the most beloved icons in the history of the business. And not the greatest wrestler, but certainly one of the greatest entertainers in the history of wrestling, and you can't take that away from him. And when you watch the crowd reaction in Philadelphia, and personally, there was a lot of debate about how will the crowd react to this. Is the crowd going to crap all over the Hogan-Sting match and talk about, you know, we want wrestling and go crazy for all the young guys? And really, they didn't do that. You know, the crowd was very respectful. The crowd was there. They wanted to see this match. They wanted to see Hulk Hogan. And when that point in the match came that Sting is on his knees, he's on his belly crawling to Hogan in the corner. Hogan's a bloody mess from their match, and Sting is getting beaten down by Immortal, and he's saying, Hogan, help me, Hogan, help me. And Hulk looks to the crowd, and he looks at Sting, and he looks to the crowd, and he looks at Sting, and he knows what he's doing when he's in that ring, and it just builds, and it builds, and it builds. And then, of course, the shirt comes off. And when I heard the reaction of the crowd, it reminded me a lot of WrestleMania 18. Now, granted, we're talking about 2,000 people. As opposed to, say, 62,000 people. Big difference there. But the crowd went crazy. The crowd had it just reacted to that more than anything else on the entire show. And, of course, Hogan went... And none of this made sense, by the way. Hogan's been a heel now for months and months and months. He's been leading Immortal and, you know, a rival of Sting. And all of a sudden, almost, you know, you flip a switch, and all of a sudden he goes from heel to babyface, just like that. And only Hogan could get away with that, but to me, it just didn't make any sense. I mean, if that was the plan all along, and it was talked about for months that Hulk Hogan eventually would go babyface, probably at Bound for Glory, if that was the plan all along, you build it. You tease it a little bit. In the months before Bound for Glory, you've got to show some chinks in the armor. You know, you start having Hogan and Bischoff quarreling a little bit more and a little bit more. It just seemed to me like there wasn't much, if any, of that. And maybe I missed it because I didn't see every Impact show, but I tried to keep up with all the reports and what was going on, how the story was progressing. It just seemed like Hogan was the heel, Sting was the enemy. They went in there, they hated each other, and Sting is begging for Hogan's help against Immortal. And in a world where things actually make sense, Hogan would say, F you, and would join in on the attack. He'd have Immortal hold Sting up and beat the crap out of him. After all, Sting just beat him in the match. Hogan should be angry. But instead, here's Hogan beating up everybody in the ring. He beats up Flair. He beats up Gunner. He beats up Bully Ray. And all is right with the world. All of a sudden, Sting loves Hogan. They're hugging like best friends in there. It's like Triple H and CM Punk. It doesn't make sense. You build up all of this animosity between these two guys. It's personal. It's this. It's that. You know? And just with a flip of the switch, it's like none of that ever happened. And but that aside, if you check your logic at the door, like I said, to me it was nothing short of a miracle. Hogan took 3 back bumps during the match. It made me cringe. I don't care what you think about Hulk Hogan. I don't wish physical harm on the man. Anybody who's ever suffered from back pain, neck pain, I don't wish that on anybody. And the fact that this guy has had at least 8 back surgeries... because he couldn't maintain a quality of life. He was always in constant pain. And I'm sure he is still in some degree of pain and discomfort, but that last surgery seems to have taken. He seems to be doing better. And, you know, he doesn't have to wrestle anymore. And the fact that he goes in there and he takes those bumps, you know, you don't you don't have to do that. And I just don't see what benefit is gained from doing that. So, you know, when you go on Twitter and you tell everybody, oh, you see, I proved all the haters wrong, you know, suck it, Marx, you know, bumping after 8 back surgeries. Who are you working? You're not working me, you're working yourself, because I'm not the one with the fucked up back, you are. You know, you're the one that if you keep on this track, you're going to be in a wheelchair in 5 years. He may be in a wheelchair anyway. It's a miracle he isn't in a wheelchair now. If you watched him coming out on Impact on Thursday night, walking to the ring, and how gingerly he was walking to the ring, I'm sure, you know, after taking those bumps. The joke's not on me, pal. The joke's on you. And apparently Hogan, there's some rumor now that that won't be his last match. To me, that should be his last match. I mean, he shouldn't have even had that match. But if you were going to have that match, yes, he lost. But you know what? That's appropriate. You should win in your last match. You should lose and put somebody over. Now, granted, in this case, the person he's putting over is a 53-year-old established veteran. But hey, it's better than nothing. Hogan lost clean. He tapped out to the Scorpion Deathlock. He had a much better fight than he had any right to have. He went from heel to face, back to the red and yellow, which is how he should hang it up when it's time for him to retire. He should retire as babyface All-American Hulk Hogan. To me, it's a good bookend to his career. Given all the crap he's gone through and what he's done to his legacy, in my opinion, over the last couple of years, you know, just know when to fold him. To me, that would be a fine ending for him. But apparently there's talk about maybe him teaming up with Sting for a tag team match against Immortal, whatever, you know. We'll see what happens, but again, the two main events of Bound for Glory, Hogan Sting, a miracle. Now, Kurt Angle and Bobby Roode. I had high hopes for this match, I really did. Kurt Angle, whether he's hurt, and let's be honest, Kurt Angle is always hurt. He was a little more hurt going into this match. He had said in the days leading up to the show that he had injured his hamstring, nobody knew how serious. He no-showed a couple of, I think, radio and possibly TV appearances, and he was hurt. I don't know if it was in training, in his Olympic training that he claims to be doing, or how it happened, but he screwed up his hamstring pretty good. And you can see when he came out for the match, it was all taped up very heavily. But you don't expect anything from Kurt Angle other than a 4-star match. He's always hurt. He's always banged up. The guy, you know, he's had neck problems his whole career. And Kurt Angle, well, he went in there and he had not a Kurt Angle match. Let's just say that much. This match, to me, was a huge disappointment. And I'm not even going to blame Bobby Roode. And Kurt Angle, for a guy who was hurt, hey, he's got my respect. You know, he went in there, he didn't have a bad match, but he had an off night. And it wasn't what that main event had to be. That main event had to be great, because A, it's the main event of your biggest show of the year. Okay, for them, it's their WrestleMania main event. And B, Bobby Roode really needed a good match here. And this match was not great. It was good, but not too good, in my opinion. Of course, the ending of this match just completely fucked everything up. Everybody thought, everybody knew Bobby Roode was winning the championship going into this match. As I said, it was the plan until Hogan got that changed. Part of it is that people get upset when things don't go the way they want them to, but, you know, it's not just that. This match really wasn't all that good, and that ending completely fucked it up and completely left a sour taste in people's mouths. Even if you watched Bound for Glory and thought overall it was a good show, from top to bottom, maybe even a great show, I don't see how that pay-per-view goes off the air and you come away with a positive impression of Bound for Glory. The way they did the finish was, basically, there were a couple of different spots where Angle hit the Angle Slam and Roode kicked out, and I believe it was an Angle Slam right before the finish, and the way Roode landed, he kind of landed close to the bottom rope, and I already forgot. He either grabbed the rope, as I remember it, I think his arm was underneath the rope or his leg or something, but it was one of those things where the referee should not have been counting, and he missed it. And the match ended. Kurt Angle was declared the winner. He was announced as still being the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, and it's one of those finishes where it's done in such a way, it's designed to make you think, well, for sure, somebody is going to come down, another referee, perhaps I don't even know who the authority figure was heading into this goddamn pay-per-view. Whoever the authority figure was in TNA, nobody ever seems to know. It wasn't Dixie Carter, whoever it was. Somebody should have come out at that point and said, hold on a second here, we're not going to end Bound for Glory that way. We're going to have a decisive winner here, ring the bell, and restart the match. And of course, if they did that, Bobby Roode should win the championship at that point. The way they did that finish was horrendous. I mean, whoever came up with that as a finish should be fired. I don't care who it is. Even if it's the most creative person in that company who had, you know, one bad decision, how you end Bound for Glory and your championship main event, not just with Angle winning, but the way that he won, is completely ridiculous. I mean, to me, it would be the equivalent of, think about WrestleMania this year. Okay, let's just think about this for a second here. Look at the Kurt Angle Bobby Roode finish, and look at the John Cena Miz match at WrestleMania 27. Okay, in Kurt Angle versus Bobby Roode, you have the established veteran in Kurt Angle who is supposed to go in there, have a great match with Bobby Roode, help put him over, whether you know win or lose, help make him look good and put him over, but hopefully put him over in that Bobby Roode wins the championship. It's a feel good moment. He worked for 13 years. He was a TNA original. He's come a long way. And at the end of the day, what the fuck do you have to lose by putting the title on him? Titles mean shit these days. If you want the titles to mean something, put them on some new faces. Don't just put them on a new face because they're a new face, i.e. Crimson. Crimson does not deserve to be champion. And I'm happy that whatever plans they had for him in the Bound for Glory series got changed. But Bobby Roode, that guy can work a match. He's pretty good. He's a pretty good wrestler. But they didn't do that. But look at Cena Miz, okay? Miz was a new face in the main event picture in WWE. This year was Miz's first time ever, and perhaps only time ever, but first time ever in a WrestleMania main event. John Cena, hey, to him it's no big thing. He's always in the WrestleMania main event. Whether it's the last match or not, he's always in the title picture. And he'll be in the main event next year as well, even if it isn't for the championship. So Cena is the established veteran, okay? We're going to call Cena a veteran. He may not be the best wrestler in the world, but he's been there long enough. He's been, like I said, a main eventer on pay-per-view for seemingly decades now. Cena is the established veteran. Miz is the champion, granted, going into this match, but he's the guy that you're trying to put over. You want people to take the Miz seriously. Yes, he is the champion, but he got booked pretty poorly as champion. In fact, I would say he was probably booked better once all that crap with Alex Riley stopped. Because remember, he was losing constantly to Alex Riley. Once that stopped, Miz started being pushed better over the summer. It was even better than when he was champion. So the idea would have been, okay, Cena goes in there with him, has a good match, and if the outcome of the match is not going to be Cena winning the championship and all the little kids and the women going crazy, and Miz was going to retain his title, you're going to have a decisive finish. And what they did, if you recall, they did a double countout. Remember, Miz was up on the barricade. Cena came, knocked him over. That's when Miz's head smacked the concrete. He suffered that really nasty concussion. And the thing about that is that finish was designed to be a false finish. There was no earthly way that anybody watching that match and watching the double countout of WrestleMania could possibly think that WWE was going to allow that to end their biggest show of the year as the outcome of the main event. People were just waiting for somebody to come out. Of course, that somebody turned out to be The Rock, who came out and said, fuck that shit, we're not going off the air like that. Restart the match. Now, they only went another 30 seconds because Miz was really very messed up. But they went 30 seconds. Rock gave Cena the Rock Bottom, which everybody was waiting for. That right there was the feel-good moment of WrestleMania. And Miz got the pin and retained the championship. You had a decisive finish, but at the end of the day, yes, the heel won, but it was a decisive pinfall in the middle of the ring, and people got to see what they wanted, which was Rock beating the hell out of Cena. Rock giving Cena a rock bottom. And this WrestleMania this year wasn't even that great. That WrestleMania main event may have been one of the worst WrestleMania main events of all time, don't get me wrong. But my point is, they did a false finish in that match as well, and unlike TNA, they knew enough to not let that be the finish. Can you imagine if they would have gone off the air with Cena and Miz doing a double countout and said, hey, we'll see you tomorrow night on Raw? People would have flipped their shit. But they knew enough, they said, there's no way we can let that be the finish, and it wasn't. But TNA, they don't think of these things. You know, they just figure out, oh, well, you know, okay, so Bobby Roode's not going to win, we have to come up with another finish. What could we possibly do? That's the best you can come up with, really. I would almost rather have seen Angle beat Roode clean and decisively in the middle of the ring. Put him in the ankle lock and have him tap out. Have him hold on as long as he possibly can and then tap or pass out from the pain. Anything would have been better than what they did at Bound for Glory. So it completely messed up that main event. I felt bad for Bobby Roode, obviously, for a variety of different reasons. Let's just say that. And, yeah. Like I said, I only saw the two matches. I did not see the entire show. It's possible that everything else on the show was five stars and fantastic. I tend to not think that was the case. But pretty disappointing finish to Bound for Glory. Now, that brings us to Impact. The Impact tapings that aired this past Thursday night on Spike. By now, everybody knows, there is in fact a new World Heavyweight Champion. His name is not Bobby Roode. In fact, his name is James Storm. Surprise, surprise, that is the person that Hulk Hogan, in that radio interview last week, thought should be put on top. And lo and behold, James Storm is the TNA champion. Funny how that works. Now, I want to bring up another comment that somebody posted on Facebook, and then I'll comment on it. This person said, Rumblings of Rude in line for a main event push for 2 years. 4 months of build with the Bound for Glory series. Nearly a month of setting up the match with Angle. And then James Storm pins Kurt Angle in 3 minutes with virtually no build to become the World Heavyweight Champion. Brilliant. I feel bad for Storm and Rude equally, as they have both been shafted out of their career-defining moments. So that's what this person said, and a lot of people have been asking me, oh, what'd you think of the main event? It was crap. I disagree. I saw the key segments from Impact on Thursday. I saw the opening, which I'm going to get to that in a second, and I saw the main event with Kurt Angle and James Storm. I saw Gail Kim and all that. But I saw the main event, and look, is this the way that I would have booked it? Of course not. Nobody listening to the show would have booked what happened at Bound for Glory and what happened on Impact as they did. In fact, I mean, maybe everybody would have had a different scenario, but I can guarantee you it would not have been done the way that they did it. Having said that, I thought the main event was great, and I thought it was a really, really cool moment for James Storm. I'm happy for the guy, and apparently so is everybody else, because the place went nuts. We had Bobby Roode come down, and he was excited. Obviously, his partner, his best friend, just won the championship. Kazarian came down, AJ Styles. It was a very quick match, like he said, about 3 minutes. Kurt Angle pretty much dominated. He was beating the crap out of James Storm in the corner, just pummeling him. Came out of the corner, posed to the crowd, which is always a bad thing to do. Turned around and got nailed right in the jaw with a super kick. And just like that, it was over. James Storm pinned him 1-2-3, won the championship. Yes, it was a very brief match. Could it have been longer? Sure. But here's the thing. Not every title match and every title change has to be 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. Sometimes in the blink of an eye, just like that, you can lose the championship. And this whole argument that, well, James Storm didn't get that big career-defining moment and, you know, the main event of a pay-per-view with pyro and confetti and all this, not everybody has their first championship win be, you know, like Shawn Michaels, the boyhood dream at WrestleMania 12 or something like that. For fuck's sake, Bret Hart won his first WWF championship at a fucking house show in Canada. Mankind, Mick Foley, who probably, in all fairness, nobody ever thought would be a world champion, but nonetheless, he won his first championship on Raw, just like James Storm won his first championship on Impact, both of which, by the way, were taped shows. In fact, what's funny about Foley is that technically he won his first championship in 1998, and it didn't air on television until the next year. I don't know if there's ever been, in WWE anyway, another person to win the championship 1 year, and technically it didn't air until the next, but yeah, taped Raw. You know, people knew about it because it was taped, so they, you know, and I remember that too because I avoided spoilers back then with those taped Raw shows like the plague, and WWF.com put that fucking spoiler about the main event on their own webpage, right there on the main page, no warning or anything. I was pissed when that happened. But again, it was a taped show, free TV, it was not on pay-per-view. I don't even think it was hyped up the week before. It was probably one of those matches that got made at 9 o'clock, and by 11 o'clock, he was the champion. I don't see too many people over the years bitching about Mick Foley's first title win. In fact, they look back on that night pretty goddamn fondly. Look at somebody like Edge. Now, granted, that was on pay-per-view, but it was a New Year's Revolution, a pay-per-view that nobody saw. Let's be honest. And again, that was also that was even less than the Kurt Angle-James Storm match. It consisted of Edge coming in, capitalizing on Cena, who had already been bloodied up. He gave him a spear. I think he kicked out. He gave him another spear, and that was it. And Edge won his first world championship that way. I don't remember too many people complaining about the fact that, oh, poor Edge, you know, they give him his first world title and it's in some throwaway Money in the Bank cash-in at the end of a fucking B-show pay-per-view. So, I don't really mind that so much, because this is TNA, this is the way things are. You just accept it for how it is. If it was a perfect world, then yes, it would have been a much bigger deal. But for how it was executed, when I was done with the show, I just thought to myself, like I said, I'm really happy for the guy. That was pretty cool. The crowd went crazy. I loved how he ran into the crowd immediately, was celebrating with the fans. He called for a beer. They passed a beer to the guy. And it was just a really, really cool moment. It really was. Now, Impact on Thursday night coincidentally scored one of its highest ratings of all time. It was not the highest rated Impact ever. It was probably top three. But keep this in mind. You know, Eric Bischoff immediately went on Twitter. He was ripping on the dirt sheet sites. You know, I wonder why when we do things the way they want, ratings are low, and when we do things this way, they're high. Well, what douchebag number one over here doesn't realize is that when Impact aired last year following Bound for Glory, I believe that was right after Jeff Hardy won the championship, they also did a pretty high rating. It might have even been higher than this show. I don't remember. And then they quickly fell back to normal levels the following week. The key, of course, is in the follow-up. It's not in a one-week rating. What does a one-week rating really do? If you had 2 million people watch Impact this week and you're back down to 1.5 the following week, then who's the fuck-up? So if I were Bischoff, I would have waited another week or two before I start spouting my mouth off on Twitter. We'll see. Hey, maybe he's right. Maybe Impact next week, they're able to maintain those levels. I would be willing to bet the farm that Impact is going to be right back to normal levels next week, and maybe even lower the week after that. I would guarantee you that Impact is not going to be anywhere close to where it was this week, come next week, and for sure not the following week. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. But that typically is the pattern. It's not as though TNA every now and then doesn't pop a big rating, but they always go right back down. No different with WWE. You know, if they have a Raw show that happens to do a 3-4 one week, and it's kind of sad if you think about it, a 3-4 these days for WWE, it's kind of like what a 5-4 used to be back in the day. But they'll end up being right back to where they were the week after. One week does not mean shit. But for TNA, I hope it does. For James Storm, I hope it does. The funny thing about it is that it wasn't even so much James Storm. I don't remember reading what the final segment did, but apparently the biggest segment of the show, which did something like a 1.4 and change in the ratings, was the Knockouts match on this show, which actually used to be the pattern for a long-ass time. The women's segments on Impact, the Knockouts, were doing some of the biggest ratings. And it's nice to see, you know, Gail Kim also came back on Impact this week. She was aligned with Karen Jarrett, who I guess is kind of the GM or whatever of the Knockouts division. And Gail came in as a heel. She attacked the new champion, Velvet Sky. Really cool to see Gail Kim back in TNA for no other reason. Hopefully they'll actually treat her with a little more respect than the way she was in WWE. And for Gail, I know she's got friends there. She didn't want to leave TNA the first time. So for her, congratulations. You know, I feel happy for her. Hopefully she'll actually be used. And they'll be able to put her talents to good use, whereas in WWE, they never gave a shit. They pretty much wiped their ass with Gail Kim in WWE. So it was cool to see her on the show. But, you know, everybody wanted to know, what'd you think of the main event? It was terrible. It was 3 minutes long. You know, maybe I'm just feeling generous this week, but like I said, when I came away from it, I just thought it was a really cool, really feel-good moment. Now, having said all of that, okay, I'm not going to let TNA off the hook so easily. Having said all of that, the plan, apparently, and this may be giving away some spoilers for the next week or two of Impact, so if you don't want to know, skip ahead a little bit. On Impact, this upcoming week, apparently, there's going to be a number one contenders match involving Bobby Roode and Samoa Joe. Yes, the same Samoa Joe that I think has lost every single match in the last, like, 3 years in TNA. And I exaggerate, but not much. In fact, Samoa Joe is in a match just last Sunday at their pay-per-view, and he lost there again. So explain to me how Samoa Joe is granted an opportunity to be the number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship. You know, this is where I've talked about this before. I may have even talked about this on that podcast I did, episode 127, when I did the whole WWE business model if I were in charge of that company. What both companies are missing is some sort of top 10. And TNA had something like this, and they completely fucked it up. I mean a top 10 or, you know, power rankings, whatever you want to call them, done correctly. Fans love that shit. People love statistics. They love numbers. They love seeing a chart. Who's number one? Who's number 10? They could follow along. It's all interactive. And on top of that, it would make, I think, your job easier if you're writing the show and putting together the show. You look at the chart and say, okay, well, here's where we are. Here's the number one contender this week, and this guy is, you know, here on the list, and let's see who's next in line for a shot at the championship. But they don't bother with that. They take a guy who they've completely, you know, just made out to be a jobber, even though the fans still care about him. I don't know why. And out of the blue, he gets a title opportunity, potentially. Now, he doesn't get that title opportunity because Bobby Roode beats him, and they've actually set up the first James Storm-Bobby Roode championship match. Yes, a championship match for the next TNA tapings coming up in Macon, Georgia on the 26th. They're already going to give the match away. I mean, when I read that, I thought it was maybe a typo. I thought this can't possibly be what they're doing, or maybe it's not a title match. Nope. They're doing the match. They're going to tape the match this week. Again, for Impact, not for a pay-per-view or anything like that. Now, that is pretty fucking stupid. James Storm versus Bobby Roode, even with James Storm as champion of Roode chasing, I mean, that's a feud that you can actually make some money on. That's a feud that you can get people involved with. First of all, it's a feud for the championship with two new people. Two people, by the way, that have always been loyal to TNA. They're not WWE guys. They're not even ROH guys. They're TNA guys through and through. And it's two guys that you're not used to seeing in the main event. It's two guys who were over with the audience. You can really do something special with this and get people interested in it, and maybe they will. But they're giving the fucking match away this week for the championship. Who books this shit? I mean, that's just mind-boggling to me. And they can go a million different ways with this. You know, to me, one of the ways that would make sense, you build, and TNA doesn't know the definition of the word build. I mean, that word just does not exist in their vocabulary. I mean, if you use the word build in front of a TNA writer, he'll scratch his head. But you build the idea that Bobby Roode is getting increasingly jealous of James Storm. If you want to go in the direction of Bobby Roode ultimately turning heel, confronting James Storm and saying, I was screwed out of the championship, that should be my belt, you don't deserve it. And eventually, he goes heel, Storm is the face, and they feud for a couple of months. You could drag that out. That's one way you could go. I don't know if that's the direction they're going in. That's one way that I would consider, being that they already fucked it all up. You can't go back and change what they've already done. That's a direction I would certainly consider going in. But again, they're giving the match away. Unless it's a swerve and the match doesn't actually happen, which is certainly possible, I don't understand this at all. I just don't get it at all. And I'll tell you something else I don't get. I don't get how on a show where wrestling matters, you can start your show with 40 fucking minutes of talking. That opening segment on Impact went in excess of 40 minutes. It probably went over, what, four commercial breaks? It took them 40 minutes to say what could have been said in five, maybe 10 at the most. Wrestling matters. In this segment, we had Dixie Carter return to power. She made Sting basically the GM of Impact, handling day-to-day operations for the company. You all know how I feel about this rotating cascade of who has the power when it comes to wrestling shows. So now Sting really is in charge, after all those weeks ago when he only lied and said that he did. You know, where does the network fit into all this? All we ever hear about in TNA is the network. I don't think the network was even mentioned in the middle of all this. Frankly, I don't care. So then we had Sting, in his very first decision as the Supreme Leader of Impact, make a Kurt Angle versus Bobby Roode rematch for the title on that show, and it was promptly nixed after Kurt Angle came out. He made a point that, per the stipulation in their contract, if Bobby Roode lost, which he did because he's a loser, he could not get another title shot so long as Kurt Angle is the champion. So obviously now that Kurt Angle is no longer the champion, Bobby Roode doesn't have to worry about that, hence why he's getting a title match. But anyway, this just went on and on. And by the way, Hulk Hogan came out in the middle of all this. He came out before this, I should say. In the red and yellow, he basically said, I'm back. The old Hulk Hogan is back. I've seen the light. Sting is the man. Sting is the true American icon. He said all this shit that you know he doesn't even believe. And then he left. And this just went on and on and on. James Storm eventually came out. Bobby Roode came out. This was just ridiculous. It just never ended. 40 minutes of this shit. Just completely ridiculous. And you know what? If you want to have 40 minutes of talking, it's your company. Do whatever you want. But don't say wrestling matters. I know they were pushing it more weeks ago, but that was your tagline. You know, it was your slogan, your motto. That was your big thing that makes TNA different than that other company. Wrestling matters. Get the fuck out of here, wrestling matters. And of course, Bischoff goes back on Twitter, mind you. I forgot to mention this. Bischoff goes back on Twitter, and he says, I guess this is in response to the reaction online to people when James Storm won the championship. He says, having a blast watching internet marks react. Candy from a baby, he says. And then Hulk Hogan wrote, good morning, Hulkamaniacs. Can't wait for all the Roode fans that turn to haters to see the big picture. Thank God we still have real marks. That's what he said. These are the people running TNA, folks. Apparently for another 2 years. So that's something to look forward to. I mentioned Gail Kim came back on this show. That's a positive development there for them. And one development that is anything but positive. More Jersey Shore bullshit coming soon to Impact. They put together a deal with Ronnie from Jersey Shore for a couple of appearances, the first of which he will make on the November 3rd Impact show, which is being taped, the Macon, Georgia one, actually. That's where the Storm Roode Championship match is scheduled to take place. So, at the end of the day, when it comes to TNA here, before I move on, I like James Storm being the champion. If Bobby Roode is not going to be the champion, James Storm is the next best thing. Anybody but the usual parade of, you know, former WWE guys that they put the championship on. And his title win was a feel-good moment. Yes, it was not on pay-per-view. It was not in front of a big crowd. It was in the Impact Zone. And it was on free TV. It was a three-minute match. Who cares? There's so much more wrong with TNA for me to complain about. This was not one of those things. Normally, with TNA, when it's over, when the segment is over, the match is over, it just makes your blood boil. You know what I mean? How can you hate on a match? How can you hate on a TNA Championship main event that did not feature a fuck finish, a ref bump, or outside interference? That's about as good as it gets for a TNA main event. So, I give it a thumbs up. But on all the other shit that's happened over the last week with TNA, to me, doesn't bode well for their future. WWE Vengeance, let's move on to another pay-per-view here. Vengeance is tomorrow night. Alberto Del Rio, John Cena will have a last man standing match for the WWE Championship. I don't care. I really don't. Cena, you know, if I sit here and I say that there's no way Cena's going to win the championship, I have no idea. I said that before Night of Champions. I still don't understand why they put the championship on him. It didn't make any sense at all. But I'm pretty confident Cena's not winning the championship here. Not because there's reports online that WWE doesn't want him winning the title. I don't buy that for a second, by the way, that they're going to keep him away from the title picture. I'll believe it when I see it, but Del Rio's going to go over here. You can't have any other outcome. He has to win this match. Mark Henry and Big Show for the World Heavyweight Championship. Going to stay with my man, Mark Henry. He's still kicking ass every week on TV. He's been beating the shit out of John Morrison every week, and that's, well, that sucks for John Morrison, but it's making Mark Henry look pretty good, and I think he'll skate by here with the championship. No reason to put the belt on Big Show. He doesn't need it. So Mark Henry continues as world champion. We have Miz and R-Truth in what is probably the real main event of this show against CM Punk and Triple H. Now, I had somebody write into me before inquiring as to whether or not I thought Triple H might go heel in this match, and I hadn't really given that much thought because they haven't done anything to tease the idea of him going heel. Which in TNA means that he could go heel tomorrow because it wouldn't matter because they don't build anything. But I don't think he's going heel yet. I think at some point he probably will. Could he perhaps leave CM Punk high and dry in this match? That at least would make it make sense to some degree as far as why he's been buddying up to him. You know, he's been buttering up Punk, and he's going to pull the rug out from underneath him at the pay-per-view and fuck him over. It's possible. I just don't see it happening. You know, Triple H just got removed as the COO, in part because of Miz and R-Truth. Miz and R-Truth were wreaking havoc and chaos, and they lost faith in Triple H. He lost his gig. Even though I guess he didn't, because now that I think about it, I think Triple H is still technically the COO. He just doesn't control Raw. This whole fucking thing is so completely ridiculous, it's not even funny. I don't think Triple H is going heel. As far as who wins this match, I'm going to go with Punk and Triple H, and I could be wrong. You know, if they don't coexist, they could lose, sure, but Punk and Triple H, I think, are going to go over here. Randy Orton against Cody Rhodes. I don't believe this is for the Intercontinental Championship. They have not billed it as a championship match. So I'm going to go with Cody Rhodes on this one. Cody Rhodes stands to gain a lot by beating Randy Orton, either clean or even not clean. I don't really think that matters. I mean, Cody Rhodes is the bad guy. He's the heel. Cody Rhodes does not have to beat Randy Orton clean. But a victory over Randy Orton would help him out a lot, and I'm going to go with Cody in this match. We have Sheamus and Christian going to go one-on-one again. I'll pick Sheamus in that one. Divas champion Beth Phoenix defends the title against Eve Torres. I would certainly hope they're not taking the title off Beth so quickly, so I'll go with Beth. And then Dolph Ziggler, I believe, is supposed to defend the United States Championship against Zack Ryder, or I know they were teasing a tag team title match where Ziggler and Swagger would face Air Boom. I don't know if that match is still happening or not. I believe there is a U.S. title match with Zack Ryder and Dolph Ziggler. I don't believe they're going to put the title on Zack Ryder, at least not yet. I mean, if they did, hey. If they put the U.S. title on Ryder, it really is a feel-good story. I mean, look how far the guy's already come. You know, nobody expected him to be a main eventer or anything like that, but the guy went, he took the bull by the horns, he started that stupid little YouTube show, which turned into a pretty entertaining show. And one that got the attention of the people that matter in WWE. He's selling some merchandise. If you want to get their attention, that's the best way to do it. And if they actually put one of their major championships on him, well, major is up for interpretation, but a title that is at least recognized by WWE. His internet title is not officially recognized. If they put a belt on him, That's pretty good deal for Zack Ryder there. So he should feel good about himself. And even if he doesn't win, he's getting a pay-per-view match. So good for him. I'm going to go with Ziggler. I just don't see them putting the title on Ryder. That's the card for Vengeance. As of right now, they could add something at the last minute, but last time I checked, that was the card. So I don't know. You know, it's like any other WWE pay-per-view. I mean, there's nothing special about it. They did absolutely nothing on Raw last week to get me overly excited. I mean, the Punk and Triple H stuff, they did a decent job with that. You know, Miz and R-Truth, you know, beating down Punk the way they did on Raw. It was a pretty good beatdown, too. I actually thought that segment was pretty good. I was about ready to just sign off on that whole thing when they went to commercial break after Johnny Ace came out. I thought Johnny Ace threw the match out, which would have been the third time, I think, in as many weeks that WWE has just had somebody walk out in the middle of the match and say, well, match over. But thankfully, they came back. They finished the match. Punk won. They beat him down. Triple H had been ejected from the building earlier in the match. So I thought that whole thing was actually pretty well done. Like I said, that's the real main event of this pay-per-view. Everything else, there's nothing special about it. Nobody could possibly care about John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio. Mark Henry versus Big Show. I love what Mark Henry's been doing, but nobody gives a fuck about that match. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Some people probably do. They've done a pretty good job with Big Show since he's come back. Big Show is great as far as just seeming coming off as natural and not phony or anything like that. But Mark Henry versus Big Show, just doesn't do anything for me. And, you know, I saw the match at Money in the Bank. It wasn't good then, and I don't think it's going to be much better now. For Cody Rhodes, it's going to be a big night. I imagine it will not be his last match with Randy Orton, probably the first of at least one more. So for him, it's an important show. For me, it's not important enough to spend $45, but we'll see how the buy rate does. Last year around this time, I think they were still doing bragging rights, which just completely died a death on pay-per-view. So you ask yourself, is Vengeance going to do worse than bragging rights or better than bragging rights? I would think Vengeance will do better than bragging rights, but probably not by much. It just seems like they're putting all their eggs in the Survivor Series basket anyway. You know, full steam ahead to that pay-per-view next month. The Rock coming back very soon. And we'll talk about him in a moment. Just a few more thoughts on Raw in Mexico this past week. It was the very first, not only Monday Night Raw from Mexico. They were in Mexico City, but the first ever WWE television tapings from Mexico. This was a very big deal, and WWE did a piss-poor job of making it seem any more special than any other Raw show. Raw looked the same. It felt the same. They had a lot of talking in English, which I'm sure just went over fantastic down in Mexico, to have people talking nothing but English for fucking 2 hours. If you're going to grade them A, B, C, D, or F, they get an F for the way they treated this show, because this should have been something special, and it felt like just another Raw show. As a Raw show, it was okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't the worst Raw that I've seen. That was a couple of weeks ago. But there was nothing overly special about it. I mean, that just seems to be the same thing I say every week about WWE. There was nothing special about it. It was ho-hum. It was like any other show. Give me something to get excited about. You know, they were doing a good job of that in July for a couple of weeks, and then the bottom fell out, and everything went right back to being the way it was. So buried somewhere deep in there is the ability on their part to actually entertain us and make us excited about something. And they just, 91% of the time, I don't know where I got that number from, but hey, 91% of the time, they don't do that. And it shouldn't be that way. Even if not every week is going to be a home run, I'm not saying Raw should be a fucking 4-star show every week. But for God's sake, you can actually try to get people excited. I watched that CM Punk Dean Ambrose match from the FCW show, and part of that was the whole spontaneity of it and seeing Punk down in, a little dingy gym in front of 100 people. But it doesn't take a lot to get people excited about what they're seeing. But when you give them the same shit all the time, this John Cena thing, I really think it's a rib on the fans. I think they do this as a joke at this point, because they see everybody get all upset every time John Cena gets a title match, and Vince laughs and says, fuck him, let's give him another title match. I am convinced of that at this point, that is why he keeps getting title matches, that and the merchandise he sells. But it's funny because he doesn't have to be in a title match to sell that merchandise. So like I said, I think they just do it to fuck with us. But it's the same shit all the time. How could somebody... So they put a last man standing stipulation in there. And that's supposed to mean what to me exactly? How is that supposed to get me any more excited to see John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio? Can you explain that to me? Of course you can't, because there is no answer. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. I don't really have a whole lot more to say about that show. I'm not going to do the usual good, bad, and ugly, because I'm already going a little long here, but needless to say, Raw should have been special this past week. maybe they were a victim of their own timing in that they couldn't really focus so much on the fact that, wow, it's our first time in Mexico, because they had to focus on Vengeance. It was the go-home show to the pay-per-view. I think they failed on both counts. So, Raw failed on Monday night. Now, as far as SmackDown goes, I saw the Sin Cara Azul versus Sin Cara Negra match. It was mask versus mask in Mexico City. So, obviously, you would think, wow, this is a big deal. I didn't even know about this match until I saw it pop up on YouTube. I had heard that it had happened at the tapings. I didn't read the results of it. I didn't know if it actually happened, if it was just talked about. The fact that they didn't announce this match in advance is a little bit puzzling to me. I'm not quite sure why they didn't. It's not a huge deal, just because mask versus mask doesn't mean as much to the people in the U.S. as it would in Mexico. So them not making that big of a deal of it, let's say the week before, I can understand that. It means more in Mexico than it would here. But still, Sin Cara versus Sin Cara, the loser loses his mask, is still a pretty big fucking deal. And the fact they didn't bother announcing it the week before, apparently all they did was put some videos. They had some promo videos back and forth. They were doing some sort of angle between the two of them on WWE.com. On the goddamn website, they were promoting this match and ran an angle. It's not a way to promote a match. You've got 9 hours or something like that of fresh television every week, and so you're going to promote this feud on your website? Are you kidding me? That's what they did. Sin Cara Azul won. Sin Cara Negro, that being Junico, was unmasked, and it was kind of a cheap finish in that you briefly saw what he looked like. There was never a clear view. Sin Cara Azul knocked him off the apron. He was kind of covering his face up. You couldn't really tell, but I assume he'll be back on TV next week, and we'll be able to see what he looks like. What his character is going to be, I don't know. Then again, maybe not. Maybe they just move him back down to FCW. If they did that, I feel sorry for the guy. Junico spent a long time in FCW before this opportunity came along. And I think he deserves a spot on the roster. He wasn't terrible or anything like that. I mean, the original Sin Cara does Sin Cara better than he does. That's not his fault. So we'll see if they keep him around or if they send him back down to Florida. And actually, there was one more thing I wanted to talk about on Raw. The whole Jim Ross, Michael Cole thing. The main event of Raw in Mexico was Jim Ross and John Cena against Alberto Del Rio and Michael Cole. So they have Jim Ross and Michael Cole in the main event of your very first ever television show in Mexico. Two announcers, by the way, English-speaking American announcers who, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't even think their commentary airs when Raw airs down in Mexico. I'm pretty sure they've got their own commentators. So why people in that crowd would have given a fuck about Jim Ross or Michael Cole, I don't know. Who thought that was a good idea? I don't know. Who thought it was a good idea to fire Jim Ross in the first place, let alone fire him and then just bring him back the next week? Anyway, moving on. Mick Foley is coming back to WWE. He is being advertised for the November 14th edition of Raw, which is going to be the three-hour show. That's the Rock reunion show that The Rock is going to be on right before Survivor Series. I don't know if Foley will actually be at Survivor Series, but the talk is that he'll be on that show, essentially doing what he probably would have done in May at the Rock birthday show that they did. That was when Foley actually went to TNA when he was still under contract and asked them for permission to show up on Raw, and they refused. So whatever comedy he would have done then with Rock, he'll probably be doing that on this show. It'll be good to see him back, and then supposedly he'll be on some more shows after the pay-per-view. So I don't know if he'll actually be at the Garden for Survivor Series, but he is on his way back to WWE, one of the worst-kept secrets in wrestling. Mil Máscaras is being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2012. Super Luchas magazine in Mexico first made the announcement. It reported that Máscaras will be inducted into the 2012 class. And Máscaras himself confirmed it, of course, after SmackDown went off the air, or maybe it was during the tapings, they just didn't air it on TV. Triple H came out, introduced Mil Máscaras to the crowd, formally made the announcement he would be going into the Hall of Fame. Obviously very deserving of it, one of the most famous and popular and successful Mexican wrestlers of all time, really. And, you know, when I interviewed George Napolitano back on episode 182, the wrestling photographer and author, he talked about Mil Máscaras being in his home. This picture's in his book of Mil Máscaras in George's home holding his kids up in the living room, and he's wearing the mask. You know, he always wears his mask. Very few people, if anybody, really knows what he looks like. And he is, of course, the uncle of Alberto Del Rio, current WWE champion. A deserving entry into the Hall of Fame. They put Antonio Inoki in there a couple of years ago, so obviously Máscaras should go in. He's also known, by the way, for being rather selfish in some ways the Hulk Hogan of Mexico. I've heard stories. I always got a kick out of the fact that when they had the Royal Rumble in 1997, Mil Máscaras was in that Royal Rumble. That was the Royal Rumble from San Antonio, Texas. They had a couple of other Mexican stars in there. And Máscaras was in there. May have been the only time he ever wrestled for WWF. He might have in the 70s, but I just don't know. But in the Royal Rumble, instead of being dumped out by somebody else, he eliminated himself by jumping out of the ring to the floor. And I always thought that was funny, again, because you can't have somebody else eliminating him. If I'm not going to win this match, I'm going to lose on my own. So I always thought that was kind of funny. And I have no problem with him going into the Hall of Fame so long as Randy Savage goes in as well. I just don't see how you cannot put Randy Savage in the Hall of Fame next year. If he doesn't go in next year, then he's never going to go in. So Máscaras is fine, but there is somebody a little more deserving of going into the WWE Hall of Fame. Hopefully they'll do the right thing. Heath Slater was suspended for 30 days. He violated the wellness policy on Monday. WWE announced that in accordance with its wellness program, Heath Slater had been suspended for 30 days, effective immediately, for his first violation of the company's policy. So I guess from now on, we get to call him the one-man contraband. That'll be his new name from now on. You know, I can't help but notice that Mason Ryan looks the way that he does and has thus far escaped any wellness violations, as have pretty much all WWE main event people. But they continue to catch some small fish every couple of months. We've seen Heath Slater get suspended. We saw Darren Young get suspended. We had a fucking referee. Mike Chioda got suspended. Sin Cara got suspended. But people like Mason Ryan and, like I said, a lot of the main event guys, boy, they've managed to be on the straight and narrow. It's funny how that works, isn't it? New WWE Network, they are wanting to launch this thing around WrestleMania time next year, which is just amazing to me. The fact that they could even get the network up at that point, I can't even fathom, let alone them having any cable clearances by that point. But they're going full speed ahead. They're coming out with a bunch of polls. They're polling people on names and concepts for these reality shows, and one of them is a reality show with a group of WWE legends living under one roof. And these are the names that WWE put forth in this survey for us to vote on as the title of this reality show. I shit you not, I am not making this up. These are the actual names they came up with. WWE House of Fame, WWE Old Timer Acres, WWE Retired and Rowdy Roommates, WWE Old School Yard, and WWE Legends House. Do they really pay people to come up with names that shitty? Because if they do, where can I put my job application in? I would love to work for this new WWE network. Old Timer Acres, Retired and Rowdy Roommates. I don't know what to say. I tried to come up with something witty, and I just can't. I think it speaks for itself. So I think the voting is closed now. I'm pretty sure that Old Timer Acres is not going to win. Although part of me, in some kind of twisted, sick, sadistic way, almost hopes it does. Yeah. Not a good window into the future of the WWE Network, although I will say the concept is interesting. Hey, if they did a reality show with a bunch of old guys in a house, first of all, they're all workers, so you know that everything that happens there is going to be completely fake. You know, they're probably going to have writers script it, but even if they didn't, these guys are all actors. They know what they're doing. It would be entertaining as hell to see the Iron Sheik in a house with, you know, five or six other guys just trying to coexist, you know, just trying to have a good time. Ring of Honor on Sinclair, episode number 4, got a quick review. I did catch it. I'm 4 for 4 so far in watching the Ring of Honor show, so I'm very happy about this. And this was another good show. Not their best show yet, but this was a good show. You had Michael Elgin against Eddie Edwards, and the All-Night Express of Kenny King and Rhett Titus against Mark and Jay Briscoe in a match that was for the number one contendership for the tag team titles. Those are your two main events on this show. The show started with a video package about the Briscoes, and it has Jay and Mark talking about when the All-Night Express were first in the dressing room in Ring of Honor. They were looking for autographs and wanting to carry their bags, and it talked about how they used to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to pick up dead chickens, and how their father, Papa Briscoe, used to beat them with a belt. Well, boo-hoo. So did mine. They also talk about some people, and just think of them as rednecks, which they are. Banjo music played in the background. Sounded an awful lot like the theme song to Deliverance, which is has me a little uneasy. This was a really good tag team match. It was even better than the main event later on in the show, in my opinion. You know, how in God's name WWE ever let go of Kenny King, I'll never know. You know, he was on the second season of Tough Enough and almost made it to the very end before Jackie Gata and Linda Miles won the whole thing. How'd that work out for you? Anyway, Briscoes won the match after Jay kicked Kenny King right square in the junk. I mean, he just, it may have been the most blatant low blow I have ever seen. And after commercial, Jim Cornette came out. He said he spoke to all the parties from the previous match. He said that Jay Briscoe was astonished that he had kicked Kenny King in the groin. He had no idea. He insisted that it was all an accident. And Jim Cornette said that although he didn't believe it, the referee's decision is final, but as he continued to investigate, neither team would be the number one contenders for the tag team title. So nothing was accomplished in that match, but it was a good match, so I can't complain. Eddie Edwards and Michael Elgin in the main event, they did their tale of the tape, said that Eddie Edwards is 27 and Michael Elgin is 24. And all I could think to myself is, wow, two guys under 30 being featured in the main event. The scary part about that is that even if you combine their ages together, they're still younger than Hulk Hogan, Sting, or Ric Flair. Anyway, it was a good match. Not great, but it was good. You know, I didn't come away from this match thinking it was anywhere near as good as the previous main events we've seen from ROH so far, but you know, it wasn't a bad match or anything. It may just be that I'm not as familiar with these two, which illustrates the importance of what ROH is doing each week with their package segments, you know, letting people know who everybody is. And one thing I hated, I will say this, I hated in the middle of this match, there was a brief cutaway to a Ring of Honor website advertisement. It was maybe 5 seconds, and then they went right back to the match. I have no problem if you want to run a graphic or a ribbon or a scroll or something like that on the bottom of the screen, letting people know about your website. That's fine. Everybody does it. But to cut away from the match for your website ad, you know, your full-screen website advertisement that you run during every other commercial break that you do, and then just go right back to the match. I mean, the match and the commentary was still going on. They just put that on the screen and went back to the match. Who thought that was a good idea? Don't ever do that again. That pissed me off so much. That was just so stupid. Who thought that was a good idea? After the match, Edwards, he pinned Elgin. And after the match, Roderick Strong came in for a face-to-face with Eddie Edwards. Nigel McGuinness, who was on commentary, came in to back up Eddie Edwards here, took his jacket off, crowd went crazy. And he's not going to be wrestling, so I don't know what the point of this was. But anyway, that was Ring of Honor last week. Like I said, a perfectly fine, perfectly acceptable professional wrestling show. Nothing on there except that stupid website advertisement really did anything to piss me off. We got some good wrestling. Everything seemed to pretty much make sense for the most part. We learned a little bit more about some of these guys, Michael Elgin and all that. And I believe there was also a segment in here with Truth Martini, if I remember correctly. So, good show. Thumbs up. And like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing next week's show and the week after that and the week after that. Because quite frankly, after I watch Raw and most of the time when I do watch Impact, I tend to be a little crazy. And Ring of Honor tends to calm me down a little bit, so it's good for my health. Speaking of health, poor health at that, ESPN had their show on Scott Hall on Wednesday night, their E60 show. It was a 17-minute-long feature, which is pretty long as far as these things go, on the rise and fall, I guess you would say, of Scott Hall. And it was a very depressing piece, but very, very well done. There were moments towards the end that kind of gave you hope, but I don't have any hope for Scott Hall. And I'm not trying to be cynical or anything like that. I hope the guy, I mean, I would love it if the guy found God or just did something to turn his life around. He seems to want to some degree. He doesn't like hurting people in his life, his friends and his family, but he has got issues that go far beyond drugs and alcohol. Not even drugs, really. It's mostly alcohol, pills, and stuff like that. He did tell the story, which not too many people knew about. I guess only his close friends really knew. About before he got into wrestling, he was at a bar. There was a fight or an argument or whatever between him and another guy over a woman, of course. And the guy went outside. I think he defaced Hall's car. Hall came out after him. Anyway, it led to a struggle. The guy pulled out a gun. Hall fought him off with a gun and shot the guy point blank in the head and killed him. And he was arrested, he was charged, he was found not guilty, I believe was the verdict. He was not convicted, obviously, there was insufficient evidence. And it was about a year or so later that he got into professional wrestling. you know, these issues go back before wrestling. You can't blame wrestling, as some people tend to do. I think his ex-wife blames wrestling. But to blame wrestling is a crutch. You know, I mean, this guy had issues that obviously started before his career started. Did wrestling make it worse? I'm sure it did, but it wasn't wrestling that made it worse. It was Scott Hall deciding to get into the wrestling business. And he kind of threw Shawn Michaels under the bus at one point during this whole thing. He was telling a story about, I guess, sharing a hotel room with Shawn, and they were each laying in bed, separate beds, I hope. And laying in bed, I guess they were taking pills or something, and Hall said to him, hey, is your heart still beating? And Shawn said, yeah, I think so. Here, take this, or something like that. And I would imagine Shawn is probably not too happy about that. I know he got tweeted a lot about it, and he tweeted and said he didn't see the piece, and you know, these were his friends. He wasn't going to comment about it. I'm sure he probably didn't feel too good when he heard that Scott had told that story, which I completely believe, by the way. Just a very, you know, is it a tragic story? I think it's tragic in that I was unaware that Hall had shot a man in the head before he got into wrestling, and I could see how that would fuck somebody up pretty badly. And he got very emotional. He even admitted during the interview that he didn't seek counseling. He was a kid. He was in his 20s. He didn't know what to do. And in that respect, it is tragic, quite frankly. It's tragic to think that had he gotten the help that he obviously needed back then, his life could have turned out completely differently. He could have ended up in the same place, but it also could have very well been that he could have turned out completely differently. But then again, he also admits that he comes from a family of alcoholics. So who's to say? Nobody knows for sure. You can what-if all day long until you turn blue in the face. It doesn't matter. The guy is smart enough to know what he's doing, and he just seems to be either unable or completely unwilling to change his ways. You know, the segment ended with a glimmer of hope in that it showed that his son Cody, I think, had moved in with him and was kind of taking care of him, and he was actually getting into the wrestling business, and Hall was essentially being a mentor to him as Cody got into wrestling. And as we found out, there was a story on TMZ.com during the week where Hall's ex-wife Dana, who was interviewed during the piece, and I would imagine she was probably interviewed many months ago for it, she says that since the piece was recorded, that the two of them, that being Hall and his son, are once again estranged from one another. And he moved out of his father's house. He said that he was tired of the constant verbal abuse as a result of Scott Hall and his binges and all of that. And he has since given up on pursuing a career in professional wrestling, which is probably for the better. But, yeah, I mean, this story, look, it won't have a happy ending. I said on a sound off a couple of years ago, I put Scott Hall and Jake Roberts on death watch. I said within 5 years they would be dead. Not because I wanted them to, but because back then we were hearing stories almost every week about the two of them, and I got so sick of it, I said, this is ridiculous. These guys are going to be dead within 5 years, and it shouldn't be that way, but it is. And we haven't quite hit 5 years yet, although it's almost 5 years. And both men are still here. They're still alive. Even Scott Hall during the piece said, I should have been dead 100 times. But he just doesn't seem to be getting any better. If anything, he's probably getting worse. He's got a lot of health issues now. He's got heart issues. He's been hospitalized for seizures. The Scott Hall story will not have a happy ending. And I think his legacy that he leaves will be that of a guy with immense talent, a very talented guy, guy that could have been a world champion at some point, could have imparted great wisdom on a lot of younger guys today as a trainer or an agent backstage in WWE or something like that. And just a lot of wasted potential there. A lot of wasted potential. Before we get to the mailbag here, I got a quick note a little while ago, actually, from one of our esteemed listeners, Mr. Bill Mitchell, who wrote in with a word about Serena Deeb, the former Serena from the Straight Edge Society in WWE, who is working independence these days. Just got word that she suffered a pretty bad concussion, actually. She's sidelined indefinitely as a result of a concussion she suffered at a recent Shimmer taping up in Chicago. And her doctor pretty much said, you got to take some time off. And reports of her retirement are greatly exaggerated right now. There's no official word of her retiring. I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility that that could happen, you know, with concussions, if it's serious enough. I mean, hey, concussions ended Chris Nowinski's career. And he's actually doing a lot of great work as a result of that in the field of concussions and brain damage and stuff like that. But hopefully her concussion, while serious, is not serious enough to end her career. So she'll be out of action for a little while. He just wanted to pass word along about that. All right, time for the mailbag here. Got time for a couple of questions. This one comes from Michael from Nottingham, England. Just subscribed to you on YouTube, which means I'm now a member of the Fantastic Four. I've been listening since Survivor Series 2008 and have been wondering, has the podcast been more successful than you expected? It's clear from your Twitter followers and Facebook friends that the popularity of the show is growing. I just want to congratulate you on what I believe is the most entertaining hour or two in wrestling today. P.S. I am from the U.K. There is no way for me to view Ring of Honor's TV show over here. The show they had on HDNet did have a YouTube channel. I was wondering if you have any knowledge or possibly how I might be able to watch the show. Well, as far as the podcast is concerned, I had no expectations when I started doing this, but the show has grown by leaps and bounds and continues to do so. I just want it to get bigger and bigger and at the same time give disenfranchised wrestling fans a reason to stick around and not give up. I've got people who don't even watch much wrestling anymore who just listen to my show and I'm sure other podcasts as well. And that's it. You know, they follow some of the news sites, they listen to a couple of audio shows, and they don't even watch. And hopefully things will start to pick up a little bit again. Got to stay optimistic, as hard as that might be. And we'll have more fun things to talk about, and people can get back into it, because it's a shame how many fans have been chased away by a lot of the bullshit that they've seen on TV in recent years. So, but I'm happy that you like the show. As far as ROH is concerned, you should be able to watch the show for free on their website. Perhaps in the UK they block you from doing that, but if not, you can sign up for a free account. You just won't have access to the latest show until Thursday of each week instead of Monday. So, like I said, it's possible this only applies to those of us in the States, and it's not international, but try it anyway, because your only other option may be questionable websites. So try that first and see if it works. David from South Carolina writes in, I've officially lost faith in WWE. I didn't watch Raw except for the Zack Ryder and Dolph Ziggler matches. Wish I could get those 7 minutes of boredom back. Basically, I heard the show was better than last week's, and I'm not going to watch another Raw. I read the spoilers, and John Morrison can't win in a tag team match. Triple H is now in Punk's corner when Punk has been trying to get him fired as COO since day one. Eve beats Natalya, and Jim Ross is back only to be in a match. Am I wrong not to watch anymore? No, you're not wrong. I can't sit here and say that you're wrong, but hey, as long as you listen to the sound off, I'm cool with it. I can't force you to watch these crappy shows, but you can't give wrestling up completely. There's a reason that we all watch wrestling, even at its worst, because it's a sickness, you see. It's in our blood. We can't get rid of it. It's incurable. So you can try to fight it as much as you want to. You can even think that you're making progress in your battle against it. It's like a chronic disease, but it's always going to creep back up on you. So you'll never be able to fully give it up. But like I said, hey, just keep listening to the sound off and everything will be cool. Gary from Virginia writes in, just wondering if you've seen Tommy Dreamer's YouTube show. I just got finished watching it, and so far, so good. If you have seen it, what are your thoughts? Also, I know you were joking on the last show, but if TNA were to have a show in the North Pole called Ice Warriors, I can't think of a more fitting main event than Glacier versus the Yeti. That's right. I'm saying it the way Tony Schiavone said it. I'm not saying Yeti. He called him the Yeti, and that's what I'm going to call him. Anyway, he says, both were in WCW, and they enjoy recycling talent, so why not? Love the show. Keep doing what you do. Been listening since at least episode 70 or so. So thank you to Gary for that. As far as the YouTube show, Tommy Dreamer's show, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, he pretty much admits that it's a complete ripoff of Zack Ryder's show. I think the two of them are friends. So yes, it is a ripoff. There's a lot of imitations, actually. Kurt Hawkins does basically an imitation. He does his own show, or at least he did. I don't know if he still does it. But I saw Tommy Dreamer's show. I thought it was a little corny in spots. Actually, very corny. But it was enjoyable. I thought it was cool. You know, he's got a kind of a funny personality, and I'll watch it again. I mean, look, it's 6 or 7 minutes of my time that I invest in it. It's not as though I have to watch 2 hours of a crappy wrestling show that I then regret watching. It's a 6-minute YouTube video. So if you haven't seen it, I don't know offhand the channel. If you go on Tommy Dreamer's Twitter, you'll probably be able to find some information about it there. So check it out. Got an email here from Richard Sanders. One of the things that Hulk Hogan said in his radio interview with Peter Rosenberg on Hot 97, through all the bullcrap he said, was that he always was willing to put anyone over. How hard did you laugh when you heard him say that? I forgot to mention this. Hulk Hogan has struck again. He did an interview with a radio station here in New York, and the video of it is up on YouTube. It's about 13 minutes long. And My goodness, what an interview this was. This was an amazing interview. And as Richard said, one of the things he mentioned was that he was always willing to put people over, or didn't mind it. I forgot exactly how he phrased it. And that was quite comical, but that was hardly the only thing that was funny about the show. He spends a majority of this interview talking about Bret Hart and the perceived heat between him and Bret and how it started. And he goes back and he tells the story about how, you know, Bret's angry with me because, you know, never got to work with him or whatever. I was leaving the company. This would have been in 93 after he won the championship from Yokozuna at WrestleMania. And Hogan dropped the belt to Yokozuna, as we all know. And he talked about how it was basically Vince McMahon's decision. You know, Bret was upset about something. There was a meeting later between Vince, Bret, and Hogan. And, you know, I guess Bret was airing his grievances and said, I thought I was working with Hogan. And Vince said, you misunderstood or something like that. And it's comical to me because that, in fact, is not the story I've heard multiple times before. In fact, they were planning on a Hulk Hogan-Bret Hart main event match at SummerSlam that year. That was going to be the SummerSlam main event. They started printing posters for that match. It's a very rare thing to find it. I don't know if it's out there. I don't know if they ever actually released the posters, but it's been said that there were actually materials, promotional materials, already printed that teased a Bret Hart-Hulk Hogan main event. Of course, what ended up happening was Hogan did not want to drop the championship to Bret Hart. He didn't think he was the right person. He thought he was too small, so of course he dropped it to a guy that was 550 pounds. And so instead, he left the company. And that's when they decided, oh, we need a new top babyface. They put Lex Luger in the role, and we ended up with a different shitty SummerSlam main event. So he conveniently forgot to tell that part of the story. But this interview is quite amazing for another reason. He talks about Stone Cold Steve Austin. And again, the perceived heat with Austin. And again, this is never Hogan's fault, by the way. All this heat that people have with him, it's never his fault. And he talks about how, you know, he never got to work with Austin, what happened at the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago when Bret Hart, he went to go shake Bret's hand backstage, and Bret just stood there. And Austin saw this and came over and kind of shuffled Bret Hart away. And Austin went out there for the Hall of Fame induction. Hogan was already on stage from a previous induction. And Austin made the crack about, you know, I was in the back looking through my bag, and I came across a can of whoop-ass, and it had Hulk Hogan's name on it. And of course, everybody popped, and the host basically brought it up because he thought Hogan was pissed. When the camera showed Hogan, he did not look very happy. And Hogan didn't remember this. He said, well, look, if I looked unhappy, I was working the angle, brother. And maybe he was, because that's what Hogan does. His whole life is a work. Apparently, he's working us, the marks, but doesn't realize that his whole life is, in fact, quite fake. And he was still trying to work the possibility of a match with Austin. Austin, of course, was not interested in doing a match. And at the very end of the interview, when the host asks Hogan, who do you most regret putting over and who do you most regret not putting over? And Hogan says, to no real surprise, the biggest person he regrets putting over was the Ultimate Warrior, because the guy wasn't ready. He was a nutcase. We all saw what happened with him. And he says at the very, very end, he said, the person I regret not being able to put over was Stone Cold Steve Austin. As though Austin would have somehow benefited, or he would have benefited even more by being put over by Hogan. And gosh darn it, Hogan regrets that he wasn't able to help get him over the hump just a little bit more by putting him over. Because, my God, you can't be number one in the history of this business unless Hulk Hogan has put you over. The guy is just amazing. It's entertaining as all hell to listen to his interviews, and it's a shame. He's very well-spoken. He's very articulate. He's a smart guy. He's not stupid. He may behave that way sometimes, but he's not a stupid man. If he just wasn't so full of shit, he would be a fascinating person to listen to, because I think he'd have a lot of great stories, and he's been in this business for well over 30 years, and it's just a shame, because anytime he does an interview, you cannot believe a goddamn word out of his mouth. You can't. I mean, I never even bothered reading his book when it came out, because I just couldn't be bothered, because I figured 80% of it was going to be fantasy anyway. And I mean, in truth, a lot of wrestling books, I'm sure, are like that. But they don't beat you over the head with it the way Hogan does. The guy is just completely, his sense of reality is completely warped. And it's still worth going out of your way to watch the interview just because of how entertaining it is. He also claims, by the way, during this interview that Bret Hart stole his best there is, best there was, best there ever will be from Hogan. which was not the story I heard. I mean, as I understand it, Brett took that, I think, from... he took it from another athlete. It might have been a boxer, I believe, that he took that line from. But I had never, ever heard the story that Brett took that from Hulk Hogan. And Hogan tells the story, you know, it was one of those marathon TV tapings back in the 80s where they keep you up until 4 in the morning taping tons of interviews. And he was in the room doing an interview. And Brett, I guess maybe with the anvil, was in the room watching and off camera. And he just came up with it on the spot, threw the line out, you know, brother, best there is, best there was, and Brett took it, and he said, you know, hey, it wasn't my line, I didn't own it, I was cool with it, but Brett, you know, hey, Brett heard me say it, and he took it. It's full of shit. Give me a break. Alex Cardozo from Tijuana, Mexico. I saw Mil Máscaras on Raw, and it got me thinking, for Mexican wrestlers, it is very important to use a mask. El Santo, who never lost his mask, was said to, that if he removed his mask, he would die, and he did it once on TV and died soon after that. Well, that is true, and actually some wrestlers are buried with their masks. My question is the following. How do masked wrestlers travel around the world, specifically after 9/11? This is not really a hard question to answer. For the Mexican wrestlers, especially the legends who have never been seen before wearing their mask, it's not as though they literally wear their mask 24/7 and they shower in the damn thing. I mean, the reality is, if you've never seen, for example, what Mil Máscaras looks like in his mask, then you wouldn't know if you were standing next to Mil Máscaras at the supermarket or at a movie theater or on the street trying to cross at the light. I mean, you wouldn't know. So these guys are constantly traveling around, but nobody knows what they look like. So there's no way for them to know that they're, for example, standing next to a legend like a Mil Máscaras or an El Santo or anybody like that. So as far as traveling around the world, you know, they're not waiting in line at the airport wearing their mask, if they're smart anyway. But if they've never been seen before, they could very easily walk around without a mask, and nobody will know who the hell they are. Although, I guess at the airport... when their bag is going through the scanner, if the mask is in there, that could potentially be a problem. But you will not see a Mexican wrestler very often, you know, at the airport wearing his mask, sitting on the airplane wearing his mask, or anything like that. So that's pretty much how it works and how they're able to get away with that. Kirk writes in. He's got three questions here for me. Question number one, why does WWE have to bury people in their hometown? Well, because they're idiots, that's why. Do you think Dolph Ziggler does the best promos in WWE right now? Nope. I think that title still belongs to CM Punk, but Dolph Ziggler is doing a hell of a job. I will say that much. You know, he comes out dressed up in a suit, looks like a star, and he as far as a microphone guy in WWE, he's certainly up there, but he's not the top guy. And question number three, what do I think of Jack Swagger and his wife naming their newborn baby boy Knox Stribling Hager? I don't know, Knox. I don't know about that middle name, but Knox Hager doesn't sound like a terrible name to me. Kind of reminds me of Brock Lesnar in a way. Brock Lesnar's not somebody to be fucked with either. So if Knox Hager can grow up with his daddy's genes and grow up to be 6'5", I don't think he's going to have to worry about anything. Got an email here from Corey Jacobs, who is actually an independent wrestler. He first would like to say, I'm a huge fan of yours. And being a pro wrestler starting out on the indie circuit, I really enjoy your podcast. I was trained by... I'm actually going to leave this person's name out. He was trained by a current Ring of Honor personality, but I don't want to mention the person's name. But anyway, he says, I was trained by this person and made him listen to you on a recent road trip. In his words, you're a smart kid, but you've got to change your name. He says he laughed very hard at that. Change my name. Can't do that. Anyway, he says, right now I'm nursing a broken back, broken L4 and L3, well, that's no fun, which is recovering slowly, and I wanted you to know that I had two questions, and three if you count my request. I can't go through all the questions here, but the second question that he has is more of a, you know, what would your fantasy pay-per-view look like if you could take stars from the past against stars from today? I'd have to give that some thought, but one thing I will say, before Chris Benoit went all nuts in 2007 and did what he did, one of the matches I always thought this would be a phenomenal match would have been a tag team match with Bret and Owen Hart against Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. You know, because Bret and Owen were a team for a while in late 93, early 94 in WWF. Benoit and Angle were actually former WWE tag team champions back in 2002. And at their peak, to see Bret and Owen against Angle and Benoit would have been, I mean, you talk about a dream match. For any real fan of wrestling, would have been phenomenal. Obviously, it was impossible, and now it's really impossible, but that would have been a hell of a match. But anyway, his request, he would love a shout-out. He says, it's funny, when his son was born, the only thing that got him to sleep was listening to your podcast, so I am in debt to you. Well, did he fall asleep because he was bored, or did he fall asleep because my voice is silky smooth? That would be my question to you. I'm guessing the first choice. Anyway, thank you for the letter. I really, it's really cool stuff. I really appreciate that. Got a message here from Matthew King, who is stationed at Quantico, Virginia, as part of the U.S. Navy. He's been hearing rumors of Chris Jericho coming back in time for WrestleMania. As far as build-up, promos, entertainment, and match quality, who would you rather have him feud with, Miz or Daniel Bryan? Actually, I would probably go with Miz in that scenario, just because Daniel Bryan has just been completely just beaten down almost into nothing since he won that Money in the Bank briefcase. And my hope is that as we get closer to WrestleMania, they'll build him back up a little bit. There's still time. But the whole point of him going to WrestleMania is to cash in for the World Heavyweight Championship. So unless they're going to put the title on Jericho, it wouldn't even make any sense to put the two of them in the ring together. Miz, on the other hand, Miz has come a long way. Miz is obviously good friends with Jericho, gets advice from him and all that. And briefly, they were teasing the idea of a Jericho-Miz team, if you remember that. Actually, they were teasing it for one show. I remember they were doing commentary together and they were complimenting each other. I thought that's the direction they were going in, and then it got completely abandoned. And seeing Jericho as probably as a face, working with Miz and the promos and everything building up to a WrestleMania match, I think could be really, really good stuff. So for now, I would go with The Miz. Of course, would Jericho get a better match out of The Miz over Daniel Bryan? Probably not. But either way, with Jericho in there, I'm sure it would be a fine match either way. Matthew continues here. He says that his wife just started being a WWE fan and a fan of the Sound Off. Her birthday was on October 20th. I wanted to know if I can give her a shout-out. Her name is Yasu, which is Japanese. I hope I said that right. So happy birthday to Yasu. Hopefully she got everything that she was looking for, and Matthew will stay safe and sound. Last letter here comes from Trust from Germany. Searching stuff on Wikipedia just now, I entered steroids and pro wrestling in the search box, and guess whose name came up first? Hulk Hogan. I just found that funny. In order of appearance on the page, number one, Hogan. Number two, Bret Hart. Number three, Kurt Angle. Number four, Chris Benoit. Number five, John Cena. I would assume Bret Hart comes up probably. I know he's admitted to doing steroids, but it's not as though Bret Hart is some big, you know, legendary steroid freak. I assume he comes up second on the list probably because he was very outspoken on the subject in light of, I think, the Benoit murders. I know he was on a lot of different news programs talking about that, talking about steroids and that sort of thing. So that would be my guess why he's ranked so high. Otherwise, I could think of 15 guys that should be ranked higher than him on that list. I'm surprised Warrior isn't in the top five. I'm surprised Mason Ryan isn't in the top five, quite frankly. But we have no evidence of that, so I shouldn't say that. He's got some awesome hair. So anyway, that's going to do it for the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. And don't forget the main page, SE Scoops Mailbag, which did not go up this week, but hopefully we'll be back next week. We need more questions there, so you can email questions for that directly to seScoops@gmail.com. But this show, it's always thesolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/solomonster, and of course, friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/thesolomonster. That's right, I said Facebook, just to be different. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and of course, you could find me, my name on YouTube is thesolomonster, all one word. You can subscribe to my channel there. And if you do all four of those things, you are officially part of the Fantastic Four, which is only one level above the Triple Threat. So either one will suffice, and you will be fully connected to the Sound Off and any sort of shows or updates that happen in the future. You'll be the first to know about it. And that leads into my announcement here, pertaining to episode 187 of the Sound Off. There is going to be a special bonus edition of the Sound Off yet again in the next couple of days. I don't know exactly when it's going to go up. It could go up as early as Sunday night. But probably it'll go up sometime Monday or Tuesday night at the latest. I may just let all the Vengeance stuff on Sunday night settle and then get a new episode up about a day or two later. But somewhere in that time period, episode 187 of The Sound Off is going to be up, and it's going to be a special interview with a current wrestling personality, somebody that you all know. And very excited to get that up. I also conducted an interview with an independent wrestling personality that I'm sure all of you don't know. But I thought it would be kind of an interesting look at somebody who is on the independent circuit trying to make a name for himself, but also has some interesting stories about working in Japan, has some interesting stories. In particular, this was of interest to me. He was a member of the first graduating class of Florida Championship Wrestling. He actually got to work with some current WWE stars on TV that we all know. And of particular interest to anybody who listens to this show, if you are an independent wrestler and you have any aspirations at all of making it in WWE, you're going to want to hear this interview, because this person, one of the things I ask him is, what are the things that they look for in a wrestler when you go down to FCW? And he was very specific in exactly what it is WWE is looking for. So this could be a very useful interview to a lot of people, I think, who listen to the show. It was pretty fascinating stuff. I thought it would be interesting to hear from him, but also hear from this other person who has worked for national wrestling promotions, has competed on television, and it's going to be a fun deal. I was very excited to be able to set that up. That'll be part of episode 187, as I said, in the next couple of days. That'll be up, so let your friends know about it when the interview goes up. Retweet it. Let people know about it. Do everything you can do to help support the show. As always, I really appreciate it. So on that note, enjoy Vengeance tomorrow night for those of you that will be tuning in. And look out for 187 in the next couple of days. And you can do that on scscoops.com. Check the main page. No better time than now to subscribe in iTunes. I'm not quite sure when the show's going up, but when it does, if you're an iTunes subscriber, it should pop up there for you right away. So get on there. Until next time, be well, stay safe. Thanks for your support of the show, as always. We'll be right back here in a couple of days with episode 187. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solid Monster sounds off on scscoops.com.